Hello, this is Tamara reading the Decatur Herald and Review. It's Wednesday, May 13th. Let's start with the front page. We have a column from Rob Stroud in Arcola, and we have photos from the article titled Missing Soldier at Home at Last, World War II, Central Illinois. We have one photo of Tom Spencer receiving a flag from the casket of his uncle, U.S. Army Staff Sergeant Paul A. Gregg, during a service at the Arcola Township Cemetery on Monday, May 11th. Gregg's remains were recently identified after he was reported as missing in action during the Battle of the Bulge in World War II. And we have a second photo of family members looking at the casket of U.S. Army Staff Sergeant Paul A. Gregg after the graveside service at the Arcola Township Cemetery on Monday, May 11th. As the family of U.S. Army Staff Sergeant Paul A. Gregg prepared for his graveside service, his great-nephew Ron Spencer said they felt both happiness and sadness. Spencer of Hopedale said they were mourning Gregg's loss in World War II and that his fate was unknown to his parents and siblings. He said they also were celebrating that Gregg's remains finally have been identified and that this has created renewed interest in his life and his military service. I'm glad he's getting the recognition he deserves, Spencer said. We are proud to tell his story, and we are proud of him. The burial of Gregg on Monday at Arcola Township Cemetery alongside his parents was made possible by the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency identifying his remains last year. He had been reported as missing in action at age 29 on December 18, 1944, in Luxembourg during the Battle of the Bulge. Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency staff had suspected in recent years that remains at the Henri Chapelle American Cemetery in Belgium belonged to Gregg, Spencer said. Consequently, the agency requested a DNA sample from Gregg's closest living family member, his nephew Tom Spencer of Carlock. Gregg went into service for just a few months before my dad was born, Spencer said. He added that his father, a retired Bloomington-based electrician, grew up having never met his uncle and knowing little about him. Spencer, who has followed in his father's footsteps by also working as an electrician in Bloomington, said they are grateful to the Defense POW MIA Accounting Agency for identifying their long-lost uncle and to the U.S. Army for covering all of the costs for a burial with full military rights. Now we are finally getting him home and can put him to rest, Spencer said of the graveside service. The route to the cemetery was lined with U.S. flags, and funeral procession was escorted by a Rolling Thunder honor guard of motorcycle riders. A delegation from the U.S. Army's 28th Infantry Division traveled from Pennsylvania to take part in the cemetery for Gregg, who had served in Company H, 2nd Battalion, 109th Infantry Regiment of this division. Lieutenant Colonel Joseph Martinkus, Chief of Staff for the 28th Infantry, said during the service that the 28th Infantry earned one of its nicknames, the Bloody Bucket Division, while Gregg and his fellow Company H soldiers were fighting German forces. Staff Sergeant Gregg was part of that name. That name was given to the 28th Infantry Division in fierce battle in the World War II in the Battle of the Bulge, Martinkus said. He is one of the men and soldiers who is responsible for this long-standing reputation of the division. Local historian Carolyn Cloyd wrote in an article about Gregg, nicknamed Dusty, that he was a captain and standout player for Atwood High School's football team during his senior year. After graduating in 1935, he lived in Arthur and worked at restaurants there. Gregg deployed to the European Theater in September 1943 with the 109th Infantry Regiment and served in a machine gun section of his unit, Cloyd wrote. The 109th Infantry Regiment participated in vicious fighting during the Battle of Hürtgen Forest, September 19th through December 16th, 1944. They subsequently fought in the Battle of the Bulge when German forces launched a massive assault on December 16th, 1944, against Allied positions in the Ardennes Forest. Some elements of 2nd Battalion, including Gregg's Company H, were cut off by the Germans. Gregg was reported missing in action as of December 18, 1944, near Forin, Luxembourg, Cloyd wrote, adding little was known about his fate until Ada Firm Dixon of Arthur sought information. Dixon wrote a letter to headquarters Company H asking about Greg. She received a reply from a Captain Robert M. O'Day that was subsequently printed in the October 11, 1945 Arthur Graphic Clarion. O'Day emphasized this was an unofficial reply based on witness statements. Greg was captured during the Ardennes breakthrough while in charge of his section. When marched to the rear, an artillery barrage laid down in error by the Germans themselves fell right in the middle of the column of marching prisoners, O'Day said, adding a POW reported Greg was killed by this barrage. U.S. Army Chaplain Monty Bauer said history shows that Greg's unit carried out acts of valor during its service in Western Europe. He said Greg likely built close comradeship with his fellow soldiers and mourned those who were lost in the time preceding his own death. Bauer said the Army has a core ethos of leaving no man behind, and it has lived up to that pledge by identifying Greg so that he can be laid to rest back home. There was a family left without closure in 1944, and today they will be reunited, Bauer said. Today, Paul will be placed next to his father, his mother, and his sister. He will rest with his ancestors. Now from local and national news, from Donette Beckett in Decatur. Team backs future of healthcare. Decatur Memorial and Milliken link up to help nursing students. Decatur Memorial Foundation and Milliken University celebrated the birthday of Florence Nightingale, a woman considered the founder of modern nursing, by announcing a scholarship program for future nurses. It represents an investment in people, in opportunity, and in the future of healthcare in Decatur across our region, said Tanya Andrix, president and CEO of Decatur Memorial Hospital. The foundation and Milliken have partnered to create the Nursing Scholars Program. Select Milliken nursing students can earn up to $50,000 in scholarships and tuition assistance. In turn, they are committed to 3 years of employment at DMH after graduation. Donors to the Decatur Memorial Foundation will support the program. But what makes this program especially meaningful is that it goes beyond just financial support, Andrix said during a Monday event to announce the partnership. These students will have the opportunity to learn and grow alongside our nursing teams. According to Paul Leidy, Decatur Memorial Foundation director, 3 students have accepted the scholarship for the fall semester. Approximately 10 students can be accepted into the scholar program. We are a community hospital, he said about the scholarship and its partnership with the university. We want those individuals, those great students that are connected to an awesome nursing program, to stay here. Students in their junior year in the nursing program can apply for the scholarship. Milliken President Dean Pribinow is hoping the scholarship will encourage others to enroll in the School of Nursing. Not only is it an excellent program, you're going to get a top-notch education, he said. The students will log more than 200 hours of hands-on patient care experiences. Just as importantly, this creates a clear and distinct pathway from the classroom to a fulfilling career, Pribinow said. We know that there's growing demand for skilled nursing. Teresa Gully, director of the School of Nursing at Milliken, has witnessed several of the nursing students struggle with time and finances. We see many students that have to work full-time or more during school, she said, and the nursing program is very challenging. It's very rigorous. The program is designed to be demanding, according to the professors. We produce excellent nurses who are going to care for their patients, Gully said. The scholarship will hopefully relieve some of the stresses associated with earning an education, Gully added. They can focus and be able to really get the most out of their education, she said. The scholarship will hopefully remove the financial concerns and the worries of finding a job after graduation. They will already have a job placement, Leidy said. The transition from college to the workforce can be challenging, Pribinow said, and they've got to find the job, then they have to get acclimated to the job. But they will be here while they're doing their education. They will be able to seamlessly transition into that full-time job. From Karina Curry, Rockford Register Star. Hard Rock Casino doubling down on Rockford expansion. Hard Rock Casino Rockford plans to add a 200-room hotel, spa, and fitness facility, new food and beverage offerings, and a 15,000-square-foot convention center with construction kicking off in 26. "We're doubling down on Rockford," Gino Iafrate, president of Hard Rock Casino Rockford, said in a news release. "This hotel and convention center cements our commitment to this community and its growing needs. Our belief is that this region is a destination that can compete at the highest level. We're not going anywhere. Instead, we're defining and building what's next and expanding our role as the premier entertainment destination in the region." According to the release, funding for hotel construction will be issued through the City of Rockford's bonding authority, with Hard Rock holding sole responsibility on repayment. "Hard Rock Rockford has been an outstanding partner to our community," Rockford Mayor Tom McNamara said in the release. "Strengthening that partnership and expanding its impact requires continued growth of the Hard Rock campus. We are proud to build on this relationship in a way that helps retain visitors and drives sustained growth in shared revenue." Ho-Chunk Nation is planning a September grand opening for its 40,478-square-foot casino resort 17 miles north of Rockford in Beloit, Wisconsin. Ho-Chunk plans to open a 312-room hotel and a 76,413-square-foot convention center in 2027. The Rockford Hotel and Convention Center will be Illinois' only Hard Rock hotel. Similar to the casino's rock and roll decor, the hotel will display items from local and global musical talents, including guitars, from the collection of Rockford native and Cheap Trick guitarist Rick Nielsen. This project will drive visitation, create jobs, and create untapped revenue opportunities for the area, Iafrate said, adding that the new hotel and convention center is step one in a multi-phase expansion, with additional details to be released soon. From our food page today, we have something easy and sweet. Rice pudding, a nostalgic dessert made with just a few simple ingredients, from Robin Miller, Arizona Republic. Rich, creamy, and scented with cinnamon and vanilla, there's something truly cozy and nostalgic about creamy rice pudding. Perhaps it's the sweet simplicity of the ingredients, or maybe it's because the comforting smooth dessert is both beloved warm and chilled. Fans of rice pudding unite. This is the only recipe you need moving forward. What I love most about this recipe is that the ingredient list is short and features easy-to-find ingredients: rice, milk, sugar, vanilla, and cinnamon. Even better, everything is combined in one saucepan and simmered together until the rice is plump and the sauce is creamy. If you're looking for a last-minute, year-round dessert that simmers on the stove while you enjoy dinner, this recipe fits the bill. Use a cinnamon stick in your rice pudding to impart the flavor without changing the color of the dish. This recipe makes 8 servings. To make this rice pudding in advance, prepare it as directed and let it cool to room temperature. Once cool, transfer the rice pudding to an airtight container and refrigerate for up to 3 days. You can serve it chilled or warm the rice pudding in a saucepan over medium-low heat, adding more milk as needed to loosen the mixture, or you can also reheat the rice pudding in the microwave. For a complete list of ingredients and instructions, please see the food page in the Decatur Herald and Review, B5. Now the first column from our opinion page. Our title this today is Shipping Law Sinks. Our first column is from Caitlin Bledsoe. Bledsoe is the Vice President of External Affairs at Americans for Prosperity. She wrote this for InsideSources.com. Bledsoe's title, Trump Right to Waive Mandate for U.S. Vessels. The Trump administration's recent waiver of the Jones Act during the conflict in the Middle East recognizes that this law restricts the efficient movement of critical resources. Passed in 1920, the Jones Act requires that all goods transported between U.S. ports be carried on vessels built in the United States, registered under the U.S. flag, and owned and crewed by Americans. On paper, the law was supposed to protect domestic shipbuilding. In reality, it didn't deliver on that goal, all while quietly raising the prices of essentials such as food and fuel. American families are facing an affordability crisis. In a recent Politico poll, nearly half of Americans say they struggle to afford basic necessities such as groceries, utility bills, health care, housing, and transportation. While many factors contribute to rising costs, the Jones Act is one of the most persistent and overlooked drivers. The administration's recent waiver of the Jones Act is to allow vital resources like oil, natural gas, fertilizer, and coal to flow freely to U.S. ports, according to the White House. That kind of temporary relief is not enough. High energy costs were a financial burden even before the U.S.-Iran engagement. Trump's decision to waive the law until August recognizes policies that strengthen American competitiveness. If the U.S. is serious about energy dominance, American energy should be able to move freely to American consumers, not be constrained by outdated shipping restrictions. Congress should repeal the Jones Act for good. By limiting the number of vessels allowed to operate between U.S. ports, the Jones Act drives up shipping costs. With so few compliant ships, rates on Jones Act routes can, in some cases, reach several times those of foreign vessels. Shipping affects nearly every good that Americans consume, so higher shipping prices ultimately translate into higher prices at the gas pump and on store shelves. A U.S. International Trade Commission analysis compared the Jones Act's effects to a significant tariff on domestic shipping. Supporters of the Jones Act often argue that it is necessary for national security. They say it helps sustain domestic shipbuilding and a merchant fleet. But in practice, the law coincided with a shrinking number of U.S.-flagged vessels and higher costs that limit flexibility in times of crisis. Nowhere are these costs more visible than in energy markets. The United States has no Jones Act-eligible liquefied natural gas tankers serving U.S. domestic routes. This leaves regions such as New England reliant on imported fuel, including shipments from Trinidad and Tobago, even though abundant domestic supplies are closer. An analysis by professors at the University of Chicago and Boston College found that repealing the Jones Act could save consumers $769 million annually in petroleum shipping costs. The burden is even heavier in non-contiguous states and territories. A study for the World Bank estimates that the Jones Act imposes $1.4 billion in annual welfare costs on Puerto Rico, with consumers bearing about $692 million of that cost. Hawaii has the highest energy costs in the nation, with electricity prices often more than double the national average. A study from the Grassroots Institute of Hawaii estimates that Hawaiian families pay an extra $1,800 annually for basic goods, including housing, food, and gas, because of the Jones Act. Congress can fix this by repealing the Jones Act and its distortion of the marketplace. The affordability crisis confronting Americans today is not driven by a single policy, but the Jones Act is a clear and fixable contributor, one that raises costs, reduces efficiency, and fails to deliver on its promises. Repealing or reforming the Jones Act would not solve every challenge with affordability overnight, but it would lower costs, strengthen energy security, and make American supply chains more efficient. In an economy where every dollar matters, that's a practical step Congress should take. We'll continue with the second column from our opinion page from Jennifer Carpenter, Allowing Foreign Crews Puts America's Coastlines at Risk, in the second half hour of our reading of the Herald and Review today. Continuing with national and world news. From Washington, D.C., Reuters, Yasmin Aboutaleb and Ahmed Aboulanin. Several top Trump administration health positions now vacant. FDA commissioner out. FDA commissioner Marty McCarry resigned, President Donald Trump said Tuesday. The embattled cabinet appointee spent weeks clashing with top White House and health advisors and drew scrutiny for a series of controversial agency decisions, according to several people familiar with internal dynamics. Food and Drug Administration Deputy Commissioner for Food, Kyle Diamantis, will lead the agency in an acting capacity, according to two sources familiar with the situation. Politico first reported the development. Marty is a terrific guy, but he's going to go on and he's going to lead a good life. He was having some difficulty, Trump told reporters. The assistant, the deputy, is taking over temporarily until we find someone. McCary's departure follows weeks of intensifying pressure from powerful Republicans, anti-abortion groups, and the Wall Street Journal editorial board, all while he clashed with top officials at the White House and Department of Health and Human Services, multiple sources said. On Friday, Reuters and other outlets reported that Trump signed off on a plan to fire him. Trump rebuked McCary this month for not moving quickly to approve flavored vapes and nicotine products, two people familiar with the conversation said. The FDA approved them days later. A source familiar with McCary's thinking said that was what drove him to resign. It really came down to the fruit-flavored vapes issue, the source said. He is at peace with the decision. He is a principled guy, didn't want to sign off on something he doesn't believe in. McCary's exit simultaneously leaves the United States without a permanent head of the FDA or Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, as well as leaders at other public health agencies. McCary was criticized for actions including his handling of reintroduced flavored vapes into the U.S. market, a stalled abortion pill review, and public disagreements with drug makers over reviews of potentially life-saving medicines and vaccines. The journal's editorial page featured at least half dozen op-eds blasting McCary for controversial drug rejections, including most recently of a cancer drug from Replimune, and calling for his ouster. McCary, a Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine surgical oncologist who criticized vaccine mandates during the COVID-19 pandemic, was confirmed by the U.S. Senate as FDA commissioner last March. Again from Reuters in Washington, D.C. Administration, war cost $29 billion. Trump to meet with Xi this week, but says U.S. doesn't need help. The United States war in Iran cost $29 billion so far, a senior Pentagon official said Tuesday, an increase of about $4 billion from an estimate provided late last month. With just 6 months before midterm elections in which President Donald Trump's Republicans may face an uphill battle to keep their House majority, Democrats are riding high in public opinion polls as they attempt to link the war with cost-of-living issues. On April 29th, the Pentagon said the war at that point cost about $25 billion. Jules Hurst, who is performing the duties of the comptroller, told lawmakers Tuesday the new cost included updated repair and replacement of equipment and operational costs. The joint staff team and the comptroller team are constantly looking at that estimate, Hurst said. He spoke alongside Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff General Don Kane. It is unclear how the Pentagon arrived at the $29 billion figure. A source told Reuters in March that Trump's administration estimated the first 6 days of the war cost at least $11.3 billion. Ahead of a high-stakes summit in Beijing, Trump said Tuesday he did not think he would need to enlist Chinese President Xi Jinping to resolve the conflict. I don't think we need any help with Iran. We'll win it one way or the other, peacefully or otherwise, he told reporters. More than 1 month after the tenuous ceasefire took effect, the two sides have made no progress on an agreement that would end hostilities. Iran, meanwhile, appeared to firm up its control over the Strait of Hormuz, cutting deals with Iraq and Pakistan to ship oil and liquefied natural gas from the region, according to sources with knowledge of the matter. Other countries are exploring similar deals, sources said, in a move that could normalize Tehran's control on the waterway on a more permanent basis. The Trump administration said Tuesday that senior U.S. and Chinese officials agreed last month that no country should be able to charge tolls on traffic through the region. Trump is due to discuss the war with Xi and is widely expected to encourage China to convince Tehran to make a deal with Washington to end the conflict. U.S. issues indictments in fatal bridge crash. Foreign operators face charges after power went out on cargo ship. From Reuters in Washington. The U.S. Justice Department said Tuesday that a grand jury indicted two foreign operators and a shoreside superintendent in the March 24 collision of the 984-foot cargo ship Dolly that destroyed Baltimore's Francis Scott Key Bridge and killed six construction workers. Separately, Maryland State Attorney General Anthony Brown said the state reached a final settlement of $2.25 billion with Grace Ocean Private Limited and Synergy Marine PTE Limited, the owner and operator of the Dolly. The settlement does not resolve Maryland's claims against the shipbuilder, Hyundai Heavy Industries. The Justice Department said that the collision caused at least $5 billion in damage and significant environmental damage. The National Transportation Safety Board last year found a single loose wire in the electrical system caused a sequence of events that led to two vessel blackouts. The Dolly's operators, along with Radhish Krishnan and Karthik Nair, 47, who worked as the technical superintendent for the Dolly, are charged with conspiracy and willfully failing to immediately inform the U.S. Coast Guard of a known hazardous condition. From Reuters, Google in talks to put data centers in space. Rival SpaceX, others under consideration, parent company says. Alphabet's Google said Tuesday it is in discussions with Elon Musk's SpaceX and others regarding future launches for its Project Suncatcher, an orbital data center project. Google's pushing the space-based data center idea with Project Suncatcher, a research effort to network solar-powered satellites equipped with its tensor processing units into an orbitable AI cloud. The company plans an initial prototype launch with partner Planet Labs next year. A partnership with Google would mark the second time Musk made peace with an AI rival he publicly criticized ahead of a widely anticipated and crucial initial public offering for SpaceX. Musk helped launch OpenAI in 2015 as a counterweight to Google's AI ambitions after falling out with its co-founder Larry Page over AI safety. Now, SpaceX and Google find themselves racing toward the same frontier, vying to bring AI data centers to space. SpaceX did not immediately respond to a Reuters request for comment. The Wall Street Journal reported the development earlier Tuesday. Orbital data center development is one of the major drivers behind SpaceX's IPO plans. From Tony Reid in Decatur, courts, two indicted on murder and arson charges. A grand jury has returned new murder indictments against a Decatur couple already facing charges of torching a female homicide victim's body and trying to conceal her death. Defendants Michael D. Wicker and Kelly J. Lewis are each accused of three alternate first-degree murder charges in the April 13, 2025 killing of a 55-year-old Decatur woman, Stephanie Crone. The indictments claim that Wicker, 44, and Lewis, 37, placed a pillow over the head, face, and neck of Stephanie Crone, thereby causing the death of Stephanie Crone. Wicker and Lewis are then accused of the Class X felony of aggravated arson for setting fire to a barn in the 8,000 block of Ridge Road near Long Creek, knowing Stephanie Crone to be in the barn. A further indictment charges them with concealment of a homicidal death in that they knowingly concealed the death of Stephanie Crone by burning the remains of Stephanie Crone, and the defendants had knowledge that Stephanie Crone had died by homicidal means. The indictments were returned April 22nd and recently ordered to be removed from impoundment and open to the public. Police said they seized two sawn-off shotguns from the defendant's pickup truck, and the grand jury indictments accused Wicker and Lewis of being felons in unlawful possession of weapons. Wicker alone is further indicted for possession of methamphetamine with intent to deliver. Motives for killing Crone have not been made clear in previous testimony about the murder case, but information listed in the sheriff's office affidavit said the victim had been heard making negative statements about Lewis, who had been accused of being involved in multiple burglaries. Anello said both Lewis and Wicker had been listed as suspects in a burglary where guns had been stolen from a vacant Macon County home. Wicker and Lewis are scheduled to be arraigned on the new charges May 13th. Both Wicker and Lewis remain in custody. Lewis is seeking to be held in the Douglas County Jail after her arraignment. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Wednesday, May 13th. Please stay tuned.